is trained through association and knowledge to understand that this is the greatest danger. This impulse, this tendency, born of contact with the modes of material nature, this tendency to want to be the master, which contradicts real wealth. The illusory idea, the Maya idea, is that real wealth means you are in the position of being in control and the master. That's what money will do for us. It'll put us in control of our life. The truth of Krishna consciousness lets us experience that wealth means servitorship. The more that we have a chance to engage in devotional service, the more wealthy we are. Lord Chaitanya spoke about this in his siksha to Sanatana Goswami. He explained what is Mahadhana, what is the greatest treasure in life. Three things: Krishna, love of Krishna, and Krishna's service. Knowing that, how would we describe poverty? The spiritual definition of poverty doesn't look at the income. It looks at how much is there or not remembrance of Krishna and opportunity for Krishna's service. So if we look in our life and we see that there's constant opportunity to remember Krishna and ample opportunity to engage in Krishna's service, then we are wealthy. As His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj was explaining yesterday morning about the Pushpa Abhishek, everyone gets a chance to do some flower petal rendering for the Lord. And in receiving those flower petals, the Lord looks at the devotion, the intent. Safety in this world means to be in a situation where you're impelled to remember Krishna and impelled to engage in Krishna's service. A poverty-stricken situation in this world means thinking I am the master. The more situations that come my way that I can be the master, the more wealthy I am. But actually, it's the reverse. The more poverty-stricken you are. When Lord Krishna, in the ninth canto of Bhagavatam, speaks to Ambarish and Durvasa Muni, he explains that there are spiritual opulences. To live on the same planet as the Lord, to be the Lord's associate, to have the same form as the Lord, to share the opulences of the Lord. But then Krishna says, my devotees, they won't accept these four spiritual benedictions, even if I offer these to the devotees. So if my devotees won't accept these four spiritual opulences, why would they ever accept material benedictions, which are all under the control and influence of time? Krishna asks us to focus on that distinguishing point, this crucial point that allows you to divide the waters or separate the cream from the milk. The crucial point is, are the opulences, is the wealth under the influence of time or is it not? So in this way, Lord Krishna dramatically makes the point about the wealth of devotional service. my devotees don't even accept Vaikuntha opulences. So why would they ever accept benedictions about opulence within the material world? Because all those opulences in the material world are under the gun of time. When I'm speaking overseas to groups of students who've come overseas from India, or those who have graduated and are already professionals, I explain to them, how are you going to explain this, that you have gone overseas to Australia, you're enrolled in universities, or you're enrolled in your corporations, and how are you going to explain to your friends and relatives back home that you are learning, you've come to Krishna consciousness and you're learning to be a servant? How can you explain that? That the greatest goal in life is to be a servant of Krishna. The greatest wealth in life is to be a servant of Krishna. This ability to see the wealth of bhakti requires some special mercy. And every devotee can be a vessel of that special mercy, in that every devotee can allow others to see the real wealth of devotional service, the real wealth of being a servant of Krishna. Without devotees, how will people ever understand this? It's very mysterious, this bhakti, that the more you become a servant, the more wealthy you are. Very mysterious. There's so much pressure in the world for us to understand and accept that the more you become a master, the more safe you are, the more secure you are, and the more happy you are. So much pressure is there. Service to Krishna is the highest form of mysticism, in that something that is the lowest from material consideration, being a servant, in the spiritual reality, is the highest situation. Lord Chaitanya himself never introduced himself as a direct servant of Krishna. He said, I'm the servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna. Our spiritual life will accelerate once we make peace with this basic principle. The more I am a servant, the more I am in my constitutional position. And the more I go away from being a servant of Krishna, meaning servant of Krishna's devotees, the more I'm feeling the dangers. That means, going back to our example about the boat on the water, danger means I'm thinking that when the waves rock the boat, they're also rocking, they're touching me, because I'm in the boat and I identify with the boat. And then I identify with the waves that are rocking the boat. It is the service to Krishna through his devotees that allows us to see the difference between material dangers being external to us and material dangers actually being us. This is a distinct experience of bhakti, art, science, and culture. Therefore, through service to Krishna and service to Krishna's devotees, we indeed can be in the world, but not of the world. Bhakti allows us to perform qualitatively equal the same thing that Krishna does when he comes to this world. He comes to this world, but he's not of the world. The perfection of bhakti gives Krishna's servants the same ability. How to live amidst the dangers of this world, but at the same time have the greatest wealth. Let us remember the poverty-stricken situation. No opportunity to remember Krishna. No opportunity to serve Krishna's devotees. Finally, Lord Chaitanya explained to Sanatana Goswami that when you're established solidly in devotional service, you'll get to a point where you can actually taste the association of Lord Krishna. And by tasting the association of Lord Krishna, that means the cycle of repeated birth and death will come to an end. By your tasting the association of Lord Krishna. Tasting, that's a distinctive experience. It's not theoretical. It's about spiritually purified senses. So even though it is a fact that by tasting Krishna's association, the cycle of bhava, repeated birth and death, comes to an end, Lord Chaitanya then explains that bhakti actually isn't for ending the cycle of repeated birth and death. Bhakti is for providing ever more opportunities to engage in Krishna's service. That's how the devotee sees bhakti. Through serving Krishna, I'll get more service to Krishna. That is the mahadhana. That is the greatest wealth in life. Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Om Agyanat Mirandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshurum Militam Yena Tasma Shivra Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Girim Yat Kripatamaham Bande Shigurum Dinataranam. While His Holiness Devamrita Maharaj was speaking, many ideas were coming to my mind in relation to what he was saying. So there is a verse in the Bhagavad Gita where the Lord says, Mamaivam sho jivaloke jiva bhuta sanatana manasastra nindriyani prakritistani karshati. That the living entities are my parts and parcels and they are eternal. But due to the conditioning of the mind and the senses, they are struggling in this material world. So, a big struggle in this material existence due to conditioning of the mind and the senses. Everybody is trying to survive in this ocean of where many sharks, very dangerous animals, the big try to eat the smaller, isn't it? So, once two devotees, I witnessed the conversation. One devotee asked the other, Hare Krishna Prabhu, how are you? And the other said, well, here I am struggling in this material world. And the other devotee asked, are you struggling to stay in the material world or to get out of it? So struggle must be there, but either way is a struggle. But the struggle to get out of material consciousness and be Krishna consciousness is a glorious struggle. A very glorious struggle. It's worthy the effort, the sacrifice, the time, the energy, because it's an everlasting benefit. Once a devotee asks Prabhupada, I can't help it but think about my personal benefit. I'm conditioned to think that way. And Prabhupada told him, then think about your real eternal benefit. And that's real eternal benefit is to be Krishna Bhakta, Krishna Das, servant of Krishna. That's the proper understanding. The example given, a servant of a king. The servant is also living in the palace. He is seeing also the same dramas and plays and music and dance that the king sees. He eats the same food. After the king eats, he also gets the same food, a nice dress and everything. So, although he's servant, because he's serving such a great man, he's also getting so many good things. So sometimes people think that to decide, this word itself, servant, is not appealing. You know, it's something like we don't want. No? But actually, it's the highest thing. Prabhupada once, a reporter asked him, are you God? Prabhupada said, no, I am a servant of God. But then Prabhupada said, no, actually, to be a servant of God, that's a very great thing. I am trying to be a servant of God. So, Prabhupada told us, and when he visited South America, he said, this Krishna consciousness philosophy is very simple. It's to understand that God, Krishna, is great and we are small. And the duty of the small is to serve the great. Very simple philosophy. It's nothing complicated. Actually, we have to understand that is our original position anyway. If we don't serve Krishna, we have to serve other things because we can't give up what we actually are. Isn't it? You can't take out of the fire its heat and light. This is the nature of fire, to have heat and light. So in the same way, it is in our true spiritual nature to be a servant. When we forget our eternal relationship as servant with God, with Krishna, then we try to serve so many other things. Country, society, friendship, love, this, that, the boss, the wife, the children, so many things. Everybody has to serve something, isn't it? And the whole idea, like Maharaj said, is everyone to want to be a master. Nobody wants to be a servant. But the fact is everybody is being a servant of the mind and the senses. Of greed, lust, anger, fear, illusion, all these things. The mind has six enemies. And these are kam, krodh, lobha, matsarya, etc. And which are lust, greed, envy, fear, illusion, and? What is the last one? Okay. So, but the problem is we have invited those enemies to reside in our mind and they are not willing to leave. They are residing very comfortably there. So if you have an unwanted guest at your home but you want him or her to leave peacefully, what you will do? You don't want to have a fight or call the police or anything like that. You just peacefully want the person to leave. So what you will do? I'm asking you, what you will do? Don't feed him. They have to find food somewhere else. And feeding these bad things means you think about it, you know. By your thought, we are feeding this bad thing. So, the idea to starve them. So the service to God, to Krishna, in another sense, is another example, an allegory given by the Vedas, is once the senses, they had a meeting. We have five senses. And they had a meeting to discuss about the stomach. And the discussion was, this stomach is sitting there doing nothing. We have to do all the work to give the food to the stomach. So he's exploiting us. He's taking advantage of us. And he's cruel and doing nothing. We have to do all the work. That means we have he's a tyrant. We have to go on strike on the stomach. Don't feed the stomach anymore. So they stop feeding the stomach. And after like 2-3 days, they have to have an emergency meeting again. Because they were feeling very, very weak and without any energy. So they immediately had the meeting. What happened to us? We were not like that before. Well, since we start serving the stomach, we start to feel very weak and no energy and, you know, distressed and all this. So maybe it is to our benefit to serve the stomach again. As soon as they feed the stomach again, immediately they felt, you know, relieved and happy and full of energy. The same way, the stomach is like God, it's Krishna. And we are like the senses. So it is for our own spiritual and material benefit is that we need to have this connection, this relationship with God, with Krishna, through loving service. That's the meaning of bhakti. Loving service. That's the whole idea. So, but we are struggling with so many material attachment, and even by trying to practice bhakti, we face so many difficulties and shortcomings and so many things. So, and we see sometimes some devotees make more advancement than others. Why is that? That same question was asked to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Prabhupada. The two disciples, they asked this question. Why sometimes we see two people coming to Krishna consciousness and one of them make advancement faster than the other? And Maharaj said, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj said, he answered the question by telling a story. He said once a groom decided to celebrate his marriage at his hometown. So he took his bride and her family members in a big boat to cross the Ganga, because it was far away village. So he paid the man a lot of money to reach there and at sunrise. It was a long journey. So he had like 20, 30 men rowing all night, you know, to reach the destiny. So they went to sleep. And when they woke up in the morning, to their surprise and their shock, they were at the same spot. The same white and black cow was there and the same house and everything was there, you know. So they run to the captain of the boat. What happened? We pay you so much money to take us to our destiny, and we are seeing what's I don't know. Let me see. So he went to you know, give the sauce to the rowman, and why you're sleeping all night? No, we still are sweating. We were rowing all night. So what happened? We don't know. So they were searching the boat to find out what happened. Finally, the groom called everyone. I found what was the problem. What was that? They forgot to lift the anchor. So no matter how hard they were trying to row, it doesn't make much progress. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explained that if we have the anchor of material attachment at the bottom, then it's very difficult to make the progress. He said, we have to transfer the attachment to the most beautiful and eternal reality, Krishna. Then naturally detachment from this side will happen. Like Maharaj was explaining, this material world is a very dangerous place. Padam padam yapi padam natesham. So if there are so many problems in this side, this is the enemy side. We have to understand that. This material world is not the friendly side, it's the enemy side. The friendly side is God's side, Krishna's side. So the more problem there are in the enemy side, the more we have to take shelter in the friendly side. Isn't it? That's the solution. There is no other solution. The world is not going to change. Once some devotees approached Prabhupada in Mayapur and were telling him that a third world war may happen any moment now because Pakistan, India, they're, you know, going to have a war, and from that may, you know, something bigger may happen, and what we should do, Prabhupada, how we should prepare if this happens. Prabhupada said, just chant Hare Krishna. And what is, that's all, Prabhupada? Yes, that's all. So, once a reporter asked Prabhupada, Master, if you see a bomb coming toward you, what you will do? He said, oh, here is Krishna coming to take me with him. So, for a devotee, there is no fear. Because he knows Krishna is my only protector. And death is as sure as death. Who can avoid this? Nothing can avoid. So what we should fear, like Maharaj was planning, is to forget Krishna and to think ourselves to be the Lord and masters and enjoyers of this world, which is a false assumption. Because we are all enslaved to our senses and mind. And so how we can be a master? And it's not that after serving the lust and greed and anger and envy and all these things, at the end of life when you are, you know, old, they will give you, you know, what do you call? They will release you. You know, okay, now your pension. You will give you a pension. Now we are retired. We will give you retirement. No, no, until the last minute. They will demand service. That's the fact. They are very cruel masters. They will not give relief. But due to ignorance only, we think, no, I am the controller and I am the enjoyer. And that's the illusion of this world. So to get out of this illusion, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to bring the highest gift of all. Nityananda Prabhu also, together they came out of compassion for the fallen souls of this world to give the highest benefit. There is nobody who can give higher benefit than them. And they came to give to everyone, regardless of caste, creed, or color of the skin or nationality. They came to give to everyone this wonderful opportunity. To understand that we are Jiver Swarupa Hoy Krishnera Nityadas. And this understanding comes very naturally when we engage in chanting offenselessly the holy name. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki.
I am very grateful to everyone for coming today. We heard from His Holiness Devamrita Swami Maharaj and His Holiness Bhakti Sundar Goswami Maharaj about this great treasure of life in the form of the opportunity to serve. I'll speak just a few minutes on this subject. Interestingly, when we speak about transcendental life, there are so many apparent contradictions. Because in order to be a servant, you have to be a master. And in order to be a real master, you have to be a servant. Does that make sense? In conditioned life, we are all serving the demands of the senses and the demands of the mind. We're walking down the street, we see something, the eyes are attracted. Well, actually, the eyes don't get attracted. The eyes just see it. And then that impulse goes to the mind, and the mind is attracted. And immediately the mind responds by either accepting it or rejecting. Either I want this or I don't want this. And then the intelligence comes in, the power of discrimination. The intelligence can decide, is this good for me or is this not good for me? If it's not good for me, the intelligence will tell the mind and the senses, no, don't do it. Go somewhere else. And if the intelligence is attracted, I mean, if the intelligence discriminates that this is something good, then no matter how difficult it is, you should work and you should do it. Let's take an example. You're walking down the street and you smell something very nice. And your nose just registers it. And then it goes to the mind and the mind says, ah, I have to have it. I have to have this. It just smells so good. And it's a bakery with nice sweets. And then your intelligence tells you, Prabhu, you have diabetes. You shouldn't eat these sweets. That's the intelligence. But the mind's saying, I want it. And because of the mind, the senses are saying, I need it. And the intelligence is saying, no, don't do it. Now, good intelligence takes the mind and the senses and directs it away from that situation to eat some Corella somewhere. It's good for diabetes, bitter melon. But if the intelligence comes under the influence of the mind and the senses, then the intelligence will figure out the way to get it. It will discriminate and then figure out the way to get it. Real intelligence, according to the Gita, is intelligence that follows the dictation of the Atma or the soul, the real needs of you and me. You have a car, and the car needs oil and gasoline. And if you really identify with the car, you think, let me drink oil and gasoline. But your intelligence tells you, no, you need a different type of food. The Atma, the soul, is thirsting for pleasure. Why? Because it's Satchitananda. Its nature is eternal, full of knowledge and full of pleasure. But when we forget the inner pleasure of the heart, that treasure that the two Goswamis were talking about, then we search for that pleasure through the mind and senses. But as Devamrita Maharaj was saying, everything that we experience through the mind and senses is dukkhalayam ashashvatam. It is temporary. It will be destroyed. It will end in course of time. All these things that we are attached to. Being attached to people means being attached to the source of life, the soul. Being attached to bodies are being attached to things. Yes? We may think that I'm in love with someone, but are you in love with something or are you in love with someone? The mind is a thing. The body is a thing. Because at the time of death, where are they? They're just things. It's the life force, the source of life, the Atma, the soul, the Jiva, that is the one, the person. So to love someone really means to love the soul in that person. And it's practical. Even your own mother or father, if they die, there's not much love for the dead corpse. There's love for the person that has left that body. What are the needs of the soul? The soul is hungry for pleasure. Why? Because it's Satchidananda. It's eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. And what is that pleasure? The pleasure of prema, or love. That's the only food that actually gives satisfaction to the heart. To love and to be loved. So when our intelligence is being guided by the actual needs and wants of the soul, then our life is directed toward the highest liberation. But when our intelligence is being guided by the mind and senses against the actual wants and needs of the soul, it leads us to so many karmic situations and the perpetuations of illusion. So Lord Chaitanya explained, as the Maharaj is told, Jivara Swarupoi Krishnara Nityadas. The greatest treasure of all treasures is to serve on the transcendental platform. But in order to actually serve with love, in order to be a servant, a das, you have to become a master over your mind and senses. So you have to be a master to be a real servant. And in order to be, well, I get mixed up by the way I speak. At the same time, in order to master your senses and mind, it's through service. And this is what yoga is. Really, yoga means, in essence, to reconnect our consciousness back to its original spiritual nature. To clean the mind and to clean the senses and bring them in harmony again with the Atma or the soul. But in order to do so, it's very important to be convinced of what real wealth is. Things are not real wealth. Divine experience, that's real wealth. Because it brings fulfillment. Krishna tells in Gita, a real intelligent person is someone who is illumined within, who rejoices within, who finds unlimited satisfaction within. And we find the greatest people, because wealth means happiness, is it not? If you have billions or even trillions or quadrillions of rupees or dollars or euros, if you're not happy, are you a wealthy person? You might be in the cover of Fortune magazine, but are you a happy person? Anxiety, frustration, identity crisis. And ultimately, either through an economic crisis or through death, you can't keep a single penny. But the wealth of the eternal soul is everlasting, and it's unlimited, and it brings happiness. So this Premadhan, the great treasure of loving, loving God, the great treasure of serving with love, because love means to serve. The difference between kama and prema, or material passion, and love, spiritual love, one is selfish and one is selfless. One is for the sake of the object of our love, and the other is to satisfy my own egoistic conceptions. Yesterday was the appearance day of a great saint, Srila Narottam Das Thakur. In his honor, I'll tell one story which so beautifully gives a real historical context to this message. Narottam Das was the only son of an extremely wealthy landowner named Krishnananda Majumdar. And he lived like those days, it was about 450 years ago in Bengal, he lived like a king. In fact, all the people in the areas where he owned the land, which were thousands and thousands of people, many villages, they considered him the king. And his only son was Narottam. That means Narottam was meant to inherit everything. He had so much home, clothes, fine foods, everything, as well as popularity and power. But when he was a little boy, somebody used to tell him about Krishna and Lord Chaitanya and different devotees of the Lord. And just by hearing these stories, he became so much attracted. He wanted this love of God. He wanted devotion. And he had a calling. And one day, it's a long story, but Nityananda Prabhu appeared to him and told him that you should go to the Padma River, because Lord Chaitanya has actually entrusted the love of his heart for you in the Padma River because of your sincerity. And after receiving that, Narottam became so intoxicated with devotion. And he had a vision of the Lord who told him, go to Vrindavan and become the disciple of Lokanath Goswami. So Narottam left home secretly. He was only about 15 or something. And in those days, he had to walk to Vrindavan through Jharikhanda forest. Very dangerous walking. Maybe almost 1,000 kilometers. Just a boy, all alone, And his father, when he found out his son left, was so disturbed. He paid a lot of money and hired detectives to find his son and bring him home by any means. So they found him in the jungles. And they said, you know, we're going to take you home by force. There were many of them. And Narottam, so sincerely, he explained to them the nature of his longing in to love and serve Krishna. And he gave them some beautiful examples. And his sincerity moved their hearts so deeply that they gave him money. And they said, we hope that this will help you on your trip. And we'll tell your father that we never saw you. So when he went to Vrindavan, he met Jiva Goswami, and Jiva Goswami brought him to Lokanath Goswami. Lokanath Goswami said, please tell me about your life. And he told him. And Lokanath Goswami said, how could I be your guru? There's two problems. One is I've never initiated a disciple in my life. And after my two dearest friends, Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami, passed away from this world to join Krishna's eternal Leela, I'm feeling so much separation and love for them that it's impossible for me to take responsibility of anyone's guru. I will not, and I cannot. Impossible. And besides that, you already love Krishna. You already saw Lord Chaitanya. You don't need a guru. Just be happy. And Lokanath Goswami, he said, actually, Lord Chaitanya may have come and he may have given me some things, but I'm so undeserving and I'm so unqualified. If I don't have your guidance, if I don't have your blessings, then I'm lost in this world. And besides that, the Lord told me to accept you as my guru. Even the Lord accepts a guru when he comes to this world. So it's necessary for me to do so. Lokanath Goswami said, this is not possible. But for 1 year, I will examine you. And for 1 year, you can examine me. And today, I'm not your guru, but I'm just giving you an instruction. Today, you start chanting 200,000 names a day. That means 128 rounds every day. So Narottam started chanting 128 rounds a day. How long would that take you? He was serious. And Narottam, he didn't want to disturb. He wasn't pressing. Because you're supposed to please your guru. You're not supposed to press your guru and pressurize your guru. Call him, cause him misery. That's not the real relationship. Yasya prasada bhagavat prasado. You know, if you force your guru to initiate you, then it's probably better not to be initiated because pleasing him is more important than the formalities. So Narottam didn't pray. He just made his, in a very humble way, he just presented his case and then he left it and did service. Every morning, Lokanath Goswami would bathe in the Yamuna River very early when it was still dark. But he was noticing something really strange. Because before he would bathe, he would respond to nature's calls. That's the way sadhus in India explain passing stool and urine to respond to nature's calls. Sounds nice, doesn't it? And he would always do it in around the same place before going in the Jamuna. But he noticed it was always perfectly clean. And it was always just so nice, this area. And the way they would wash their hands, because they didn't have soap, these yogis in Vrindavan in those days, they just used sifted dirt. And there was always a little pile of finely sifted dirt for, and a little pot of water for him to wash before going in. And Lokanath Goswami was thinking, what about the day before and the day before that? You know, that stuff should still be here. Where is it? What is happening here? 1 year passed. And Lokanath Goswami was asking several people, who's cleaning? Who's cleaning this area every day? It was Lokanath Goswami. He never told anyone. It's not like he put it on his website. Saying, see how humble I am. Nobody knows. Nobody in the whole world knows, but I'm going at 2 o'clock in the morning before anyone wakes up, and I'm cleaning stool and urine with my own hands and making it nice to please my guru. He didn't do it for any ulterior motive. He just did it because he wanted to serve. That's all. He was hoping nobody would ever find out, not even his guru. But Lokanath Goswami was really, why is somebody doing this and who could it be? And one day he decided he was going to ask Lokanath Goswami. He was going to ask Narottam Das Thakur. But then he became embarrassed. Lokanath Goswami was embarrassed to ask Narottam, are you cleaning my urine and stool? So he just asked, what are you doing all day? And Narottam said, I'm chanting 200,000 names a day. And that's as far as that interrogation went. So time went on, a whole year passed. And Lokanath Goswami thought, I have to find out who and why anybody is doing like this. So Lokanath Goswami woke up really early in the morning, earlier than ever before. Well, he probably didn't sleep that much anyway, but he went to that place earlier than ever before. And he hid behind the trees and waited. And then he saw this form of somebody, because it was dark. He just saw like a shadowy person coming with a hard broom in his hand. And for those of you in the West, they don't have brooms with handles in India. They're just like this, and you get on your hands and knees and you sweep. Yes? And he saw somebody sweeping and carefully collecting the urine and stool and putting it somewhere else and moving it to another place and then sweeping the whole area. But Lokanath Goswami could not see who it was. So he came out from his hiding place and he said, who are you? Who are you? And suddenly that shadowy form offered his dandavats, his prostrated obeisances. And Lokanath said, who are you and what are you doing here and why are you doing this? And then he got up with folded palms. He said, Gurudev, it is me, Narottam. And Lokanath Goswami saw him. And began to cry. He cried out loudly, Narottam! Narottam! Why? Why are you doing this? You are coming from a royal family. You are a prince meant to be a king. You are meant to be living with fine silks and fine foods, with many servants doing anything at your beck and call. Why? Why such a learned scholar? Such a highly enlightened being as you? You have seen God. Why are you on your hands and knees cleaning someone's stool and urine? Their excrement. Why? Why are you doing? And Narottam, with tears welling in his eyes, spoke from the very core of his heart. What he really felt. He said, My Gurudev, I left behind all of these insignificant things of this world to attain the most precious, valuable treasure of all treasures, the opportunity to perform this menial service for my Gurudev. This is my treasure. This is my wealth. When Lokanath Goswami heard this, his heart melted. He said, Narottam, you conquered my heart. Come with me, I will initiate you. That humble service attitude conquers Krishna. We were speaking yesterday. Krishna is achyuta. He's inconceivable and unconquerable. But his greatest pleasure is to be conquered by the love of his devotee. The greatest happiness is not to conquer, but to be conquered. And bhakti is that theology, that science, where God is conquered by the love of his devotee and the devotee is conquered by Krishna's love. And the expression of the gratitude of that situation is to serve. So yes, the greatest of all treasures is the opportunity to serve. And we see even in the world today, whether it's in the cinema, in the movies, or in a drama, or in a book, if somebody is willing to make great sacrifices for the welfare of other people, it touches our heart. If somebody just gains so many things, it may impress our mind, but it doesn't touch the heart, doesn't connect to the soul. And the highest extension of this principle is explained in Srimad Bhagavatam. When you water the root of the tree, it nourishes every part of the tree. When we serve God, because when we love God, because every living being is part of God, mamaivam so jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana, when we love God, we naturally love every living being. All categories of human civilization, or even all categories of inhuman lack of civilization. All categories of animals and reptiles and fish and birds. Even Mother Earth and the trees. Spontaneous love, because we see the presence of God, a part of God, a child of God in everyone. And what is our nature when we have that? We want to serve. Srila Prabhupada, our Gurudev, how much risk he took to serve. He was the guru, but why was he the guru? Because he had the purest desire to serve. He served his disciples. Gave his life, his soul, and sacrificed, risked everything. And for all living beings. And one of his most exalted, intimate, and dedicated disciples, he wrote a book. And it was entitled Servant of the Servant. And that was His Holiness Srila Tamal Krishna Goswami Maharaj. Srila Tamal Krishna Maharaj, what a service attitude he had. How much love was in his heart. How much gratitude. He became a devotee in the 1960s, I think around 67 or 68. And just understanding Prabhupada's spirit of service, he embraced it in the core of his heart. Prabhupada sat in Golden Gate Park in San Francisco playing on a little bongo drum chanting Krishna's names. Before that, he played on the bongo drum in Tompkins Square Park in the Lower East Side of New York. And wherever he did it, so many people were coming. And just by his kind, he would cook for them. He would explain nice philosophy of prema or love of God to them. He would solve their problems on so many levels. He would give them shelter. Recently, I was in London with Shamsundar Gurudas and Jamuna and Malati Prabhus. And they were talking about when they met Prabhupada in San Francisco. His philosophy, they were gradually understanding it. But he was just the kindest, most compassionate, most caring person they ever met in their life. They just wanted to be with him. Now please understand, this is the 1960s in America, where the philosophy among my generation, never trust anyone over 30. It's different than Indian philosophy, where love your mother and father and serve them and honor your mother and father. It's the Ten Commandments. And here was Prabhupada, he was older than their grandparents. But they would do anything for him. Because of his desire to serve everyone, anyone, by giving them God's love in every possible way, through every gesture of kindness. Tamal Krishna Goswami was one of those people who came at that time. And Prabhupada wanted chanting. So Tamal Krishna Goswami, he personally was the first one to organize kirtan in the streets. Actually organize it systematically and made it wonderful. And wherever there was any temples of Krishna in the world, there was just a few then, he was the one that established it. And then Prabhupada came out with his little Back to Godhead magazine, and he was the first one to really get devotees to distribute it. And then Prabhupada started writing books, and it was being published, and he was the one who, more than anyone else in the world at that time, for years and years, was inspiring parties to distribute Prabhupada's books. Prabhupada sent some of his people to London. Tamal Krishna Goswami from San Francisco, he went to Los Angeles. He was something like the temple president there, and he established a temple there. And then he went to London. Prabhupada said, show them how to organize a proper temple and proper relationships. So practically anything Prabhupada was doing, he brought Tamal Krishna Goswami as his right-hand man to establish it. Why? Because he had such complete trust in his unmotivated service attitude. He sent him to Germany. This is in the 60s. In the early 70s. Then in 1970, Prabhupada wanted to establish back in India. And he put Tamal Krishna Goswami as the GBC in charge of the whole country of India under Prabhupada. And what amazing services he did. And by inconceivable circumstances, one day Prabhupada said to Tamal Krishna Goswami, go to China. It's like the last frontier for bhakti. So he went to China. And we even have a girl from Beijing who is his disciple with us today. And throughout China now, there's devotees everywhere. This is his spirit, because he realized the great treasure, the great wealth in the opportunity to serve, to enlighten, illuminate people's hearts and bring them shelter and happiness in the love of God. So today we are launching a brand new book about Tamal Krishna Goswami Maharaj. That's actually the purpose of this program, as far as I understand. And I'll speak a few more minutes according to the schedule about the book, but now we would like to introduce Radha Charan Prabhu, who is one of Tamal Krishna Goswami's very, very intimate, loving disciples, one of the leaders among his disciples. Of course, we know Tamal Krishna Goswami Maharaj passed away from this world a few years ago. And his wonderful disciples are carrying on his spirit of loving service within the world. Let us welcome Radha Charan Prabhu and all the disciples of Tamal Krishna Goswami who have gathered here today by loudly chanting. You could also introduce your God brothers and God sisters.
I'd like to bring Krishna Goswami onto the stage.
Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Srimati Tamal Krishna Goswami Niti Namine. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much, everyone, for this wonderful opportunity to present some work on Srila Tamal Krishna Goswami Maharaj. I want to take this opportunity to show my gratitude, first of all, to His Holiness Vadanath Swami, who cordially invited me to do this book launch. I'd like to thank also Govinda Prabhu, whom I haven't met yet. I don't even know what he looks like. Okay. For arranging everything for this book launch to go on smoothly.
He will give you your first darshan.
He will. And I'm very grateful and very humbled by the beauty of Shishi Radha Gopinath and Shishi Gonitai and Srinath. And I feel blessed to have been able to participate in the flower festival yesterday. So I had prepared very methodically different points that I wanted to elaborate on, but Maharaj has covered quite a few of them. This is a great honor for me to present this book, which is the fruit of a two-year-long work and research. I want to say, firstly, that I feel very good about being here because I feel comfortable with His Holiness Radhanath Swami and His wonderful yatra. And I know that my Gurudev, Srila Tamal Krishna Goswami, would be happy about this event because he placed a major importance on his cultivation and nurturing his own God brothers and God sisters. This is something which was very, very important to him. And equally important to him was how he wanted his disciple to respect and honor his God brothers and God sisters. So I feel very fortunate to be in the presence of such illustrious Vaishnavas here. Thank you very much. As Maharaj was explaining, Srila Tamal Krishna Goswami had quite a influence on the work of Srila Prabhupada's mission all over the world. And all of you possibly have read many, many times Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita, in which you can actually read the stories of what happened as Prabhupada progressed in developing his movement worldwide, but especially here in India and especially in Mumbai, which then was called Bombay. I always remember Gira Swami saying Bombay, you know, something which is very dear to him. So Tamal Krishna Goswami was also very involved with the Bombay project at Juhu. And all over India, a lot of people, especially life members and devotees, remember Srila Tamal Krishna Goswami very fondly for his fearless dedication to help Srila Prabhupada establish Krishna consciousness here in India. This book was a test for a disciple. I was thinking this afternoon that our disciples who are able, by dint of their pious activities, by dint of their dedication, to take up the challenge of the spiritual master when they are given a service, when they are given an instruction, and just carry it on with full surrender and very quickly and rapidly, even though it may be very difficult, get results, be productive, and offer the fruit of their work to their spiritual master. And we have here four proof of that, of four dedicated disciples of Srila Prabhupada who have taken up the challenge of spreading Krishna consciousness very successfully. And there are many others who are disciples of Srila Prabhupada and disciples of those disciples of Srila Prabhupada. They are able to understand the mission, they are able to understand the service, and they can blossom. Well, the news is that I am very far from falling into that category. I'll fall more into the category of somebody who is still trying to understand the mission of the spiritual master and really hoping to blossom. And this book was an attempt for me to try to bring my spiritual master into people's homes so that they can remember the contribution of a dedicated servant of Srila Prabhupada. This is a family book. Lots of devotees have already seen this book in other parts of the world, and they have commented that this is a family book. This is a family photo album. It's about Tamar Krishna Goswami, but because his life was never separated from other devotees' lives internationally, so this book will take one. It's a meditation book. It will take one through 1,600 photos of Tamar Krishna Goswami with Srila Prabhupada. As you see here, this is a nice photo that was taken on a morning walk 1974 in Sri Mayapur. Actually, if you pay attention, you see Prabhupada's hand. This is a morning walk. Prabhupada just put fresh tilak on, and he still has tilak on the palm of his hand. Nothing ever wasted. So there are 1,600 photos that take Srila Tamar Krishna Goswami's early days with Srila Prabhupada onto his service in America and then through Europe. There are some very, very beautiful photos of parikrams in Vrindavan and Mayapur, and then his preaching in Southeast Asia, Hong Kong, Taiwan, the Philippines, and China, and then to the South Pacific in Australia, New Zealand, and Fiji. And then there's a whole section at the end about his academic work, University of Cambridge. So for me, it's an honor to have been able to present this book everywhere. I hope that the devotees, actually, the census is showing that 90% of the devotees who have acquired this book are more of admirers of Srila Tamar Krishna Goswami than his own disciples. Because, as I say, it is a family book more than anything else. I feel grateful for all the devotees who have contributed to the project, and especially two persons that I'd like to mention today. One is His Holiness Giriraj Swami, who was an important part in going through all the pages and give his very good advice. And he also honored the project by writing the foreword. And the other is Srila Tamar Krishna Goswami's own brother, Bhakta Karl, who also went through every page to do the editing for the different quotes and poems that have been placed between the photos. And in the line of his own brother, he said to me just 1 week before going for print, he said, "This book is not going anywhere until every comma, every parenthesis, and every letter is in the right position. Your brother wanted perfection. This book will be perfection." And then when he said that to me, I felt straight away my spiritual master talking to me. So this is something that I have experienced over the years by being Srila Tamar Krishna Goswami's secretary and travel with him all over the world. It is something that stays with you for many, many years to come. And it is a challenge for disciples who don't have their spiritual master anymore, just like it is for disciples of Srila Prabhupada to keep Srila Prabhupada going, to keep Prabhupada preaching, to take Prabhupada to every corner of the world. It is the same challenge. I was thinking the disciple of Bhakti Tirtha Swami, the disciples of Sridhar Maharaj, the disciples of Gaur Govinda Maharaj, the disciples of Bhakti Swarup Damodar Maharaj. How are these disciples going every day? How can they manage their lives in separation from their spiritual master? It is a double challenge, not only to be a devotee, but to be away from one's guru. This book is another reason for being born, is to perpetuate the presence of the spiritual master among the devotees. So I won't speak any further. I would like at this point to call upon my dear God brother Kostubha Prabhu to unwrap the book so I can show it to you. Well, that's good. Music comes with it. Very well synchronized. And then I'll ask Devamrita Maharaj to say a few words.
You just take the book and you unwrap it. There's a
very befitting to Tomakrishna Goswami's well-known personality. This book is 6 kilos, which for a book is very heavy. But you would not expect anything less than a heavy book for a heavy content, full of bhakti and full of nectar.
To speak about Srila Tamal Krishna Maharaj and ISKCON is speaking about the same thing. If you're speaking about ISKCON, you must speak about Srila Tamal Krishna Maharaj. It is very important for every member of our ISKCON society to appreciate Srila Tamal Krishna Maharaj's contribution. His role as Srila Prabhupada's go-to man can never be over-appreciated or overestimated. He was so meticulous in his approach to devotional service, never took devotional service in any way to be something that you would just do casually. He applied his intelligence 100% to fulfilling the mission of Srila Prabhupada. And in that way, he has left an eternal legacy for every member of the Krishna Conscious Society as to how to be the servant of the servant. I myself remember Srila Tamal Krishna Maharaj's constant meditation and thinking how to fulfill Prabhupada's order for presenting Krishna consciousness in China. He considered every angle. He would share with me his constant immersion in thinking about that. And I remember once in Calcutta, he was showing me some books that he had just printed in Chinese. And he was like a little boy at Christmas time, just bubbling over with spiritual childlike pleasure. Look at these. Come, hey, Devamrita, come here. I got to show you something. And I also remember what came out of that childlike pleasure in showing me the gifts. Devamrita, I think you should visit China. I'd like to know what your view is on the situation. His inimitable, masterly way at getting devotees to do something for Srila Prabhupada's mission. His focus and his approach, how to take devotional service so seriously as a Krishna consciousness movement, is it is ISKCON. It forms the fabric of our present Krishna conscious society. I'm very much looking forward to getting this book and reading it. And I'm sure that I'm feeling a little embarrassed, because I'm sure that the other Maharajas, especially Radhanath Maharaj, can speak far more wonderfully. I have to speak from my limited capacity because I've been asked to. I did go to China in 1984 when Goswami Maharaj wanted something. And I'll never forget when I returned, he was waiting in Hong Kong, and he wanted a complete, meticulous report on it. What did you see? What did you do? What happened here? What happened there? I'll never forget that painstaking approach to serving Srila Prabhupada. Painstaking literally means you take inconvenience, you take pain to be careful in doing something for someone else. Srila Prabhupada relied on Srila Tamal Krishna Maharaj for instilling in ISKCON something that is different than what had happened in Gaudiya Vaishnavism before. Srila Prabhupada's highest platform of Krishna consciousness allowed him to see all material energy is meant for engaging in Krishna's service, not just as a theory or a belief, but as a daily reality. And he relied upon Srila Tamal Krishna Maharaj for training ISKCON devotees in Yukta Vairagya, the continuance of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's radical for that time using of everything in Krishna's service. If you want to actually get a taste of that special flavor of using everything in Krishna's service to the nth degree, then you study the life of Srila Tamal Krishna Maharaj in his service to Srila Prabhupada, because that is, without a doubt, through that person, Srila Tamal Krishna Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada put most of his training and emphasis on this Yukta Vairagya that Srila Prabhupada received from Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Now that I have begun speaking, I could say a lot more, but please, I hope that you'll get the opportunity to read the book. Srila Tamal Krishna Maharaj ki.
Chandramouli Maharaj. Chandramouli Maharaj, would you like to say a few words?
My association with and encounter with Tamal Krishna Goswami was brief, as we were always in different places. But in those few brief encounters in different associations, I can remember clearly everything about him. And that was his quality, that everything was like a picture. Everything was like exactly how Prabhupada wanted it. Especially when it came to serving prasadam. We were together in Bhaktivedanta Manor. Actually, it was only about a month before he departed from this world. It was on Vasant Panchami, 2002. And there was a big program in the temple, and each of us, myself, Krishna Kshetra Prabhu, Tamal Krishna Goswami, Gauri Prabhu from Bhaktivedanta Manor, we each were speaking on one of the personalities that had were honored on that day. And we just barely began the program in the morning during the Bhagavatam class. And Tamal Krishna Goswami said, this program will go on for a long time, so we should break for breakfast and come back. And so that was agreed upon, and we all went for breakfast prasadam. And I remember just sitting there watching and how he orchestrated the serving in such a way that the servers were so meticulous in how they presented their service, how nicely they served prasadam. As I was watching, I was thinking, he wants to do everything exactly the way Prabhupada had taught him. During that occasion, after we took prasadam, it was kind of a humorous little exchange we had. He said, now we have to lay on our left side because we need to take a little break after prasadam. So we did. And I went into the room with him, and he laid one way and I laid the other way opposite facing him. And I said, Maharaj, there's a whole group of devotees, they're waiting for the program. He said, yeah, that's nice, but we have to do this first. This is important. So we laid for about 5, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, maybe the most. And then we went out. And he spoke. I think he was the last one to speak. It was the appearance also of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And he spoke about Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in such an amazing way that it was like living the life of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. It was like seeing it. His way of presenting the philosophy, his way of speaking in such a way, had such profundity and such depth of realization that you were enraptured and you were, in what we say, inspired in devotional life. Then he spoke about his own sannyas initiation, which was the anniversary. That was the anniversary of his sannyas initiation. It was 30 years ago to that day. How he told the whole story of him coming from grihastha life and the difficulties and the intricacies and the, how we say, the problems that came about by him moving from that ashram and taking sannyas initiation. And I was just, this is really my first real association with this personality, although I had heard so much about him over the years. And just by being in that association, hearing him speak, my mind, I said, this person is really special. He's such a Prabhupada man. And that's what he would like to be known as, a Prabhupada man. Someone who was so dedicated to presenting Krishna consciousness in the way that Srila Prabhupada taught him, according to his level of realization. We had an interesting encounter, which was kind of humorous. Later he came to Mayapur, and this was his last visit to Mayapur before he departed this world. And there was an announcement in the temple that Tamal Krishna Goswami Maharaj would be coming to Mayapur on a particular day. So those who would like to come and to greet him you should come to the gate at Mayapur, because he'll be arriving at such and such a time. So I was thinking, I'm going. I really want to greet him. I really want to get his association. But somehow, it was like 3 or 4 days later, the announcement was 3 or 4 days before his actual arrival. I had missed his arrival. And he had just come, and he was just walking in the gate, and I was walking, and we met. And I stopped, and he looked at me, and I looked at him, we smiled. And then I said, Maharaj, I wanted to come and meet you at the gate. I'm sorry, I didn't make it. He looked at me with such seriousness, but then with a big grin on his face, he said, don't let it happen again. And then he laughed, and we embraced each other. And it was just so, the way he said it, it just made me feel so endeared to this personality. He said it with such kindness. And that was Tamal Krishna Goswami. He just loved his godbrothers in such a way that he made his godbrothers feel really, really, I guess you could might say, useful, valuable. And my only regret is that I didn't have enough association to really learn more about this great personality. But I can see, and there are so many stories about how he sacrificed so much. It was Tamal Krishna Goswami who, despite everyone else's failure, got the land that is now Sridham Mayapur. It was his determination, despite the difficulties, where other devotees had somehow or other were able to fulfill Prabhupada's desire. But Tamal Krishna Goswami did. It was Tamal Krishna Goswami that, despite the difficulties that came by way of when Prabhupada's Krishna book was printed, it came in the docks in India, and it was locked there. The paperwork was not in order, and devotees tried everything to get the books released. Prabhupada sent Tamal Krishna Goswami to deal with the administration, and in such a way, and it was a difficult task. But Prabhupada knew if there's anything that was difficult, Tamal Krishna Goswami could do it. He had such determination, such dedication, and such intelligence. He was very, very much trained by Srila Prabhupada, but at the same time he had such great intelligence that he took Prabhupada's instructions and he applied it in his determinations to serve. And we can see from the life of Tamal Krishna Goswami how much it was Tamal Krishna Goswami that helped Prabhupada spread Krishna consciousness around the world. So today is a very auspicious day when we can honor a great personality such as Tamal Krishna Goswami. And out of all the personalities that have somehow or other departed our movement, it seems like Tamal Krishna Goswami is still with us in so many ways. Because when we look around, we can see the results of his service and how much he represented Krishna consciousness in such a, let me say, a powerful way. So I have had the good fortune to happen to see the book. I was in, I was with Shivaram Maharaj, and he had a copy of the book. I was looking through it. It is an amazing book. I can actually say that the work that was put into this book is done with such dedication and such expertise from my limited understanding. But it is a great honor to such a great personality. Tamal Krishna Goswami Maharaj Ki. Thank you.
Bhakti Sundar Maharaj, would you like to say something briefly? Thank you.
You will forget me.
No, I won't forget you.
Hare Krishna. Well, I have much association with Srila Tamal Krishna Maharaj's disciples in Houston and Texas and Dallas. And I had also the very good fortune to see the book also, truly. And it's a labor of love, you know, to present this book. You can see that actually there is love, you know, Guru Bhakti, you know. Guru Nishtha, dedication to please the Guru, that's the essence of our Krishna consciousness philosophy. And we see here today in this wonderful presentation of this book, the love, no? The appreciation, the sacrifice to do something to please Guru and Vaishnavas. Personally, I had the good fortune to meet Srila Tamal Krishna Maharaj in the first New York Ratha Yatra back in 1976. And even at that time, he was famous all over ISKCON for his achievements and service to Srila Prabhupada. He was like a commander, you know, preaching and taking buses full of devotees, distributing books all over America, you know, and doing big things, you know. For us, was like our hero, you know. Brahmachari is coming from South America, also distributing a lot of books there. Actually, we competed with them 1 year, that same year. And by Prabhupada's mercy, we win the all worldwide marathon of book distribution that year. Of course, the marathon, December marathon. But we were introduced to him at that time, and, you know, we had nice talk. You know, he gave us nice instruction about, you know, preaching and Prabhupada's book distribution. And I was very, very impressed by his determination and power and energy, you know, to please, to serve Srila Prabhupada. And that was the most prominent characteristic in him, is love and dedication to please Prabhupada by whatever means, you know. So whatever something was very difficult to do, Prabhupada will call him, you know, knowing that he will do it, you know. Anything that was happening in the movement at that time, important, he was involved in that, you know. Some or other, Prabhupada, you know, relied on him as his right-hand man to do difficult things, you know. So that was to his eternal glory, you know. So he told me one funny story about preaching in China, you know. That, of course, I mean, was very, very powerful preacher, you know. I mean, the sense that the devotee will bring some people to him to preach to, and he will sit with few persons and will preach to them the essence of Krishna consciousness philosophy for like 2 hours or 3 hours. And at the end, the people ask, "Very good. Now we understood what we are. What is our duty now? Okay, your duty is now to chant 16 rounds and to follow the four regulative principles." And they will say, "Yes, we will do." And they will do right away. You know, I mean, we're talking about people coming first time, and immediately by his powerful preaching, decide, "Yes, we want to be surrendered to Krishna, become devotees." That was really amazing. I mean, for Chinese people, for anyone in the world, you know. And he told me a funny story that he went to somebody's home for a program in China, and they offered him a cake. So he said, "Are this vegetarian?" They say, "Yes, yes, no egg, no fish, no meat, no chicken, nothing. Pure vegetarian." Okay. But he still was looking at the cake, you know. Something, he had the sense that something was there, you know, but not right, you know. So say he said, okay, fine, I believe you, but please explain to me exactly what ingredients are in the cake. I want to know full details. Anyway, they were explaining, okay, flour, butter, sugar, and this. And then they said, what is the name of that green insects that jump? Grasshopper. And grasshopper. He said, what? Grasshopper? He said, now we have to add one more thing to the four principles. No fish, no egg, no meat, and no insects. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. In 1986, the 500th anniversary of Lord Chaitanya's appearance day, we were celebrating Mayapur, very big festival, you know. And he presented to all the Vaishnavas, to all the devotees, he wrote a very beautiful play called Sri Jagannath Natakam, the wonderful pastimes of Lord Jagannath. And he trained, you know, actors how to play the drama. He was very much involved in every detail how the drama will be presented, and I mean, was very wonderful to watch that drama. So nicely done, so devotional, so beautiful. And I remember I had the good fortune to be sitting nearby here and watching the play, but I was coming from America, and I was still in jet lag. I couldn't help it sometimes to doze a little bit. But he, from time to time, he will, are you watching carefully? That's my drama. He will remind me that. So, how did you like my drama? Oh, Maharaj, wonderful drama. Although I saw maybe half of it, maybe a little more. And I mean, although he know very little, you know, we had little contact with him, but still he dealt with so lovingly. The Maharaj was explaining so naturally, so affectionately, you know. And once in Texas in the 90s, he invited me to have a prasad lunch with him. He was so meticulous about how things should be served and the right way and everything so nicely, you know, so perfectly. He liked it so much to see every detail, you know, very nicely done. And at that time, I asked him, you know, to have a private conversation, and we spoke about some spiritual intimate topics, and like for 1 hour or so. And then I came to know later that when I went to Los Angeles, I met another God brother there, and he told me that immediately after I left, Tamakrishna Maharaj called him to make some comment about the conversation we had about, you know. And he said it was very, very, very sweet. So I felt, wow, I'm such an insignificant person. And he, you know, he appreciated even the most insignificant person, you know. And the God brother, he loved his brother, God brothers, very, very much, really. He instructed his disciples. I have proof of that, and you know, experience of that in Texas, that to treat his disciples as his own self, you know. He very much took care of that, very, very much. And while watching this wonderful book, going through all the pages, you know, you can see, you know, the love, the exchanges of appreciation and affection between him and Srila Prabhupada and his godbrothers. And it's a wonderful journey of love and dedication and trust and to honor, you know, the love of a great personality for his guru and the service of his guru is a very, very wonderful occasion. So I'm very happy to be part of it today. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Maharaj. Thank you very much. Would you like to say something more, Maharaj?
This book, it is a photographic journey following chronologically the history of Srila Prabhupada's movement. Comprehensive, because Srila Tamal Krishna Goswami Maharaj was with Prabhupada, establishing practically every project there was. So we see really the whole history of ISKCON in these photos. And we get a glimpse of how things were done by seeing the very intimate love between Tamal Krishna Goswami and Srila Prabhupada in each one of these wonderful adventures. A few years ago, I was at the bedside of His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Swami Maharaj. He was physically dying of melanoma cancer. He asked me to be with him till he passed away. For almost 8 weeks we were together. And every day we would have very deep spiritual discussions. One day he told me something I will never ever forget. He said it was a secret, but he didn't mind if I told others. He told me that His Holiness Tamal Krishna Goswami appeared to him in a vision. Not exactly a dream, because it was too real and too profound to simply be a dream. He said Tamal Krishna Goswami was standing before him, crying. And Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj asked him, "Why are you crying?" Then Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj went into a little of his background with Tamal Krishna Goswami. He said from the time he joined, or he became a devotee, Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, it was Tamal Krishna Goswami who would bring him to Srila Prabhupada, would facilitate his personal interactions with Srila Prabhupada on so many occasions. An example is Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj was risking his life behind the Iron Curtain, spreading bhakti when religion was illegal. And he would write letters of reports to Srila Prabhupada when Prabhupada was passing from this world. And Tamal Krishna Goswami would read those letters to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada would ask Tamal Krishna Goswami to read them sometimes over and over again. And if special guests came to meet Prabhupada, he would ask Tamal Krishna Goswami to read those letters to him, to them. And when Prabhupada came to London, Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj and Kurukshetra Prabhu they drove all the way from somewhere in the Yugoslavia or someone, all the way to London. And when Tamal Krishna Goswami heard that he was there, he called him up to personally meet Prabhupada. And that's when Prabhupada embraced Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj and cried and said, "Your life is perfect. Thank you very much." So from that time and many other instances, Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj always felt that Tamal Krishna Goswami is his older brother, who was always the connection, a strong connection to Prabhupada. So in this vision, Tamal Krishna Goswami was weeping. And Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj asked, "Maharaj, why are you crying?" And Tamal Krishna Goswami said, "Because when Prabhupada called me from this world to join him, I had to go. And after I left, I know how much all of my disciples, well-wishers and friends suffered. I'm crying because Prabhupada is now calling you, and you must come. And I know how much all of your disciples, followers, and friends will suffer in separation from you. That is why I'm crying." This book is an offering of love and separation from the disciples of Srila Tamal Krishna Goswami to their Gurudev and to the world. It is an offering of love. And if you can afford it, please buy it. If you can't, please see it. It's a wonderful offering of love. Thank you very much.
I'm going to ask one more person to speak, if I may. I'd like to ask my god brother Kasturba Prabhu to say a few words, and then we'll just wrap up, because I'm sure you're all hungry. And I've got some good news that there is prasadam. Just a little longer. Thank you very much.
Om Agyanatmarandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshuram Miltam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. Thank you for asking me to speak. I think it's somehow really appropriate that it be here in Mumbai, that this book is launched like this. And I think the fact that it's a book of photographs is very nice, because although we, we believe that Vani is more important than Vapu. Actually, Prabhupada taught us this, that the teachings are more important than the physical presence of the guru. But once I remember, Tamal Krishna Goswami said to me, "It's true that Vani is more important than Vapu." But then he looked at me really gravely and said, "But Vapu is very important also." And so it's nice to see these photographs. I remember once I had a photograph of him. I was very brand new. I think I was aspiring to take initiation from him. And I used to carry a photograph of him in Mumbai, in front of the Juhu temple. He's standing with his danda. He's looking very young, very bright, sattvic, and determined. And I used to carry that with me. I think I used it as a bookmarker. And somehow he saw me with it one day. And he said, "Let me see that." And he took it and he looked at it. And he handed it back to me. He says, "Do you know where this is?" And I wasn't sure, but I said, "Is it Bombay, Gurudev?" And he said, "Yeah." And then he looked at me. and he gazed into my eyes, and he didn't say anything, but I felt he was saying a lot. And Chandramali Maharaj also mentioned how he could gaze at you, and it's true. And that's why I'm looking forward to looking in this book, because I'd like to gaze at the pictures and feel him gazing back. But when he gazed at me that time, and he said, yeah, this was Bombay, I felt what he was saying through his eyes was, do you understand how I sacrificed there? And all that, you know, Prabhupada's disciples went through there. All the challenges and all the austerities that they took up. And that's what made us who we are. And if you want to be my disciple, then you should take that into your heart and understand the gravity of that. And that's what it means to be a disciple. And so many of the things that everyone has been speaking today have been reminding me of different things. And particularly, Srila Radhana Swami mentioned this, I guess, paradox, that to be a master, you must be a servant, and to be a servant, you must be a master. Because I could, you know, he was a very multifaceted personality, and we could talk for a long time on just one aspect of his personality. You know, if you want to talk about how sweet he could be, then we could spend all day talking about that. If you want to talk about how intelligent he was, we can spend the day talking about that. And the many qualities he had that were very, that he just displayed in great abundance. But if I had to choose one that I thought most completely captures who he was, then I would say that I think what made him very special was that he seemed to possess some kind of very, very deep and clear understanding of the nature of the relationship between a guru and a disciple. And he wanted to share that with his disciples. I remember once very clearly, I was also just very brand new, and he was speaking mostly to his disciples. He was giving a class in Dallas. And he said, Prabhupada gave me so much. And he said, and if my disciples are willing to come close to me, then I'm willing to give them everything that Srila Prabhupada gave me. And those who did get close, they had the experience that it could be difficult. Because another aspect of his multifaceted personality was how sharp he could be. So it could be hard to come so close. But he was eager for someone to come close. And he was eager to really bestow all that he had gained on them. So when I think of him, I think of Hanuman, because as others were also mentioning, when Prabhupada wanted something done that it seemed that no one else could do, then Srila Prabhupada would turn to him. And I feel that this is what Ram turned to Hanuman, to accomplish those things that no one else could do. But not only that, because when we think of Hanuman, we can think of the very, you know, like how powerful he was, you know, his strength, his heroism or his courage. But there's also more to Hanuman than that. And particularly I think of his expertise and his sensitivity in his service to Ram. And I always think of when he was sent to find out who were these people that are coming. There was Ram and Lakshman had arrived. And Sugriv sent Hanuman to find out who they are. This may be a danger. So Hanuman went in disguise and he spoke to them. And because he's... So, because Hanuman spoke in such a beautiful way, that Ram and Lakshman were just completely charmed by him, and this eternal connection took place there. And I feel that all the expertise that my Guru Maharaj had and all the sensitivity that he had, and we could talk all day about those things too, in many ways, as well as the courage and as well as the boldness and as well as the strength and power and so on, in all these ways he reminded me of Hanuman. And I believe that that's how those qualities manifested so predominantly in him. It serves to exemplify his understanding of the relationship between the guru and the disciple. Because I didn't know him until after he'd been Prabhupada's disciple for 20 years or so. But from what I understand from people that knew him before, he was already very intelligent and very kind and very sweet in many ways. And he had so many wonderful qualities. But that when he met Prabhupada, he gave himself to Prabhupada, not just partially, but he gave himself wholeheartedly, just completely. That somehow he had this understanding that the relationship between the guru and the disciple, there's very many practical aspects to it, but there's also something mystical about it. That by aligning your heart with the heart of another human being who's aligned their heart with God, that's the process through which we become transformed. And so my understanding is that he had all these special qualities already, but because he gave himself so wholeheartedly, that intelligence that he had just became sharper and sharper and sharper. And the kindness that he had just became more and more glowing and widespread and sensitive and intimate. And like this, all his qualities became magnified. So it felt very special to be near to him, to be close to him. And I'll just wrap up by saying that I feel it's really wonderful to be doing this here in Mumbai, because I feel the times that he had here, and he would tell me how special they were to him. And I think also a lot that made him who he was is that in his service to Prabhupada here, in the place that in many ways became the most difficult place to serve, he had the association of very special, very cultured people here in Mumbai that were there in those early days. And I think from them he learned so much, and that had a lot to do with how all that he knew and how he carried himself. So I'm very grateful to be here amongst all of you today. And I'm very grateful to Radhashram Prabhu to compiling this. I'm very eager to go through the pages. So thank you all very much.
Thank you very much, Maharaj, for allowing us this extra time. And thank you for speaking so nicely about my spiritual master and Srila Prabhupada. Thank you to all the devotees for being patient and lending your ears and lending your heart. As we said before, this is a big family, and what is dear to one is dear to everybody. So, moving on to logistics, we had difficulty, as it often happens in India, to get books from Calcutta to here. Downstairs, there are only 12 copies available. However, there's a big stock coming in a couple of days, which will be available from the bookstore, from the gift shop downstairs. But I will be in the courtyard taking name if you want to order a book, and then the gift shop will supply you. So thank you very much for your support. And I want to finish by saying that whatever donation is invested into the acquisition of this book is going 100% into helping with the preaching in China. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Srila Tamo Krishna Goswami Maharaj ki.